testing.
It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Sorry to let everybody down.
I think people are okay with that. So welcome to the first Wire of the year. We've been on a bit of a break, and I take it that you have too. What have you been up to over the last few weeks?
Oh, mate. Parliament rose the week before Christmas, and that was quite a really intense, full-on few weeks in the lead-up to Christmas. We obviously had a lot of the agenda for the government's 100-day plan coming through, as well as I think the final members' bill that we debated was David Seymour's end-of-life choice bill. My bill was the next one on the ballot there, which I inherited from Julianne Genta, the medicinal cannabis bill. So I was actually prepared to go into that debate, right after the vote for Seymour's bill, but it didn't happen. So we then went on break, and I actually went over to Spain for a bit to see some of my family in Europe. Yeah, so that was cool, and got back on Tuesday. Unfortunately, hadn't bought my scissor tickets. To sleep instead. Woke up on Wednesday and went through my emails and called my awesome EA Tim, and my calendar just exploded for the next 3 months. So I am very, very busy for at least this next year. So yeah, really looking forward to it. There's a lot of awesome stuff coming up.
Cool. You mentioned you didn't get your scissor tickets. Are there any other gigs that you have just enough time to go to?
Oh, mate, I'm really gutted. I've got to talk to Gareth Hughes about this, but he's managed to schedule a planning day for caucus on Laneway.
No.
I know, it's like, yeah, mate, hashtag millennial problems or some such. But yeah, so I'm really gutted about that one. That was really what I was looking forward to the most, actually, over summer.
Who is your Laneway go-to?
I think it's just more the general vibe of Laneway that I enjoy. I've gone pretty much every other year, including when I was back working at B, obviously. And it's just something to do with it being part of Auckland culture. So, yeah, it was just more the general lifestyle of Laneway, I think.
Cool. So before Parliament rose, I had a chat with James Shaw about what he was up to in summer, and he said he was going to do, I got a bunch of reading to do. And I was like, oh, yeah, you into fiction? What sort of books do you read? And he's like, parliamentary readings, Joe.
his ministerial stuff. Yeah.
Did you get much reading done over summer?
I actually did get a few things done. I read the, this is so classic and a little bit too cliche, but I read Bernie Sanders' book.
So got
a few ideas from that. I'm actually going over to the States. Oh, this is an exciting thing that's happening this year. I'm going over to the States for the Inter-Parliamentary Young Parliamentarians, something very long, convoluted title, in March or so. So I'm the Green Party MP who's going over. There's people from all of the different parties, MPs from all the different parties. So I'm going to try and meet up with Senator Bernie Sanders. So Senator Bernie Sanders, if you happen to be tuned into 95 BFM, number one alternative radio station in Auckland, please meet with me.
Well, we can hope that happened.
I was just going to say, we've had a fan text in, won't be long till it's co-leader Chloe. Kia kaha, been a fan since your Wire days. Jonathan.
Oh, Jonathan, thank you so much. I'll just quash one of the things mentioned in there right now. No ambitions at all for the co-leadership, but I really appreciate that. Thank you for your support.
Thanks, Jonathan. So first up, we've got some breaking news. Today, I suppose, the talk of the town is that Green MP Hayley Holt will be taking Hilary Barry's spot on Breakfast. Are you sad to see her go?
Yeah, I am gutted to see Hayley leaving the Greens. She is really, really cool, and obviously has been a really staunch advocate for a whole bunch of things pertaining to climate change in particular, and obviously her background in sports, and particularly snow sports, helped to bring a different demographic into that conversation, which was perhaps previously excluded, and I'm happy to say, by the Greens as well, and actually probably excluded by politics as a whole, extreme sports fans. I think that Hayley is an absolute national treasure, but I also wish her all the best for her, the show coming up. I think that she'll be incredible at it, and her time in broadcasting has kind of proven that.
Yeah, Cool. And at the end of last year, I also talked to James about sort of changing mindsets from sort of being in opposition to mm-hmm. being in government. And he sort of said, because a lot of the criticism of the Green Party was that you guys had sort of stopped being incredibly vocal about as many issues as you were before you're in mm-hmm. power. And he said that a big part of that was just sort of like learning when to bring it back and sort of take things internally. Did you think you sort of had that sort of learning process? Because I suppose you weren't in opposition for as long as the other members. You sort of jumped straight into parliament. Do you think that sort of gave you an advantage?
Yeah, so I'll kind of couch what I'm about to say. So I, obviously the Green Party's in a confidence and supply arrangement. We're not in full coalition. So what that means is that we're kind of one foot in, one foot outside of government. Myself as an MP, a non-minister in the Green Party, that means that I kind of sit actually on outside of government. The arrangement, obviously, with and the legislative arrangement with government arrangements is such that all ministers are bound by collective responsibility, and when you're a party who's obviously fully part of the government, you too also have, by way of ramification, collective responsibility for the decisions that are made in the cabinet, and that's all outlined in the cabinet manual. So what that means is that we're in a really interesting, unique position as the Green Party to be able to kind of be a bit of a critic and conscience, but also support and push through obviously our agenda, what we'd like to see in terms of policy as well. So I think that that's quite a powerful, really cool position for us. And just to touch on what you were saying before about some people critiquing us and saying that we hadn't been as vocal as we perhaps have been in the past. Yeah, I totally hear that. And that is absolutely, to echo James's sentiments, something that happens as a result of trying to find your feet in a new governing arrangement. The practicality of being both inside and outside of government is such that you have to figure out what works. You have to figure out how to actually get stuff done. And that's not going to work if, you know, we've got the circular firing squad, which I may get in trouble for saying, but the left very frequently, we end up doing, you know, we end up attacking each other as opposed to necessarily like collaborating or working together for creative solutions. And that's what actually excites me about the three parties in government. There's a lot of, you know, the Nats rhetoric is that we're this three-headed hydra, which I think sounds kind of cool. But you've got a multiplicity of views there, which is actually ultimately, I think, a strength. You have to have a collaborative, creative outcome for every problem. So, yeah, it's really exciting to me, and it's something which is quite historic for New Zealand.
And so over the past few months, also, you said it's been real hectic and you sort of had a lot going on. What have you learned over that time?
Well, this probably actually also pertains to what you were talking about before, how I've just come into being kind of in government from being a candidate previously. So obviously as a candidate, you can kind of be quite frank and quite free and say whatever you want about anything, about a plethora of issues. What I found in becoming an MP for the most part is the weight of responsibility. And this is a very real thing that I felt quite heavily quite fast. Everything that I say now has impact on not just my caucus, but, you know, the whole Green Party and everybody who voted for us, and now the government as well. So that does mean that there is a need to obviously reflect. You know, with great power comes great responsibility, to quote, you know, Peter Parker's granddad. Yeah, there's been a lot of learning curves in that respect. I am a huge nerd, so have enjoyed reading, you know, all of the rules around select committees and also participating in select committees, because that's obviously actually the wheelhouse of where a lot of stuff gets done. Because we are quite thin on the ground, you know, going from 14 to 8 Green MPs, I've had a whole lot of opportunities to debate a whole lot of things. So have already had about several debates in the House. So it's meant quite a steep learning curve, but the ability to learn really fast, which has been cool.
Cool. And you've said on Facebook, I'm going to read my quote so I don't mess up. 2018 is set to be a big one for progressive political action. What sort of things can we expect?
There's a whole lot of things that, mate, let me tell you.
What are your highlights?
First and foremost, so I can only really obviously speak to the things that I'm directly involved in. There's obviously a whole lot of stuff that our Green ministers and other MPs are going to be doing. But I don't know the inside of everybody's brains, so I'm not sure on their plans. But we'll all be working towards implementing the 20 goals that were outlined in the confidence and supply agreement with Labor. But beyond that, what I am directly invested in coming up in mid-February, my medicinal cannabis bill. Which I obviously inherited, and it was originally drafted by the Honourable Julianne Genta, who now as a minister cannot progress it in its first reading. So I'm really excited by that because we've got a really interesting situation, right? And this has been brought up by quite a few different commentators in the media. The government's obviously introduced its legislation for medicinal cannabis, and I think that is a really great baseline, a starting point to say, look, we've got agreement on the fact that we need to progress legislation to liberalise is the wrong word, but basically make it easier for people to access medicinal cannabis because people are currently suffering. You know, that was something which was very successfully campaigned on and advocated for by Helen Kelly. Medicinal cannabis legislation does go quite a bit further, but I think that that presents us with the opportunity to have a really robust, thoughtful debate about what kind of legislative framework we want to have in Aotearoa New Zealand. We're really lucky in that we are actually quite a bit further behind other jurisdictions, so we can look at other countries around the world and say, okay, they've done it, what's worked? And I do think, in my personal opinion, that my medicinal cannabis bill follows that a little bit more closely. But basically what I'm campaigning on and what I'm asking for is to get people to write in to their local MPs or MPs that they know or like or support or what have you, and ask them to vote for this cannabis bill to go through its first reading, which will then mean it goes to select committee where it can have thorough public proper input. So that's the medicinal cannabis stuff. I'm also really interested in and stoked about the opportunity to progress some really cool stuff in education. So I have quite big boots to fill following on from Catherine Delahunty, who obviously previously was the Green Party spokesperson on education. I'm working on a lot with both Tracy Martin and obviously Chris Hipkins, the Minister and Associate Minister for Education, about inclusive education in particular. So yeah, there's a lot going on. I could go on forever. Right. I've got 8 portfolios.
Yeah. Well, on the education point, Lisa over here has been doing some reporting on the National Party's bill, which has been released about compulsory teaching of second languages in schools. Lisa, do you want to ask some questions about that?
Yeah, I was just going to we're going to hear New Zealand's Principals Federation position on the matter in a few minutes. But just to explain to our listeners what it's all about. Basically, New Zealand's education spokesperson Nikki Kaye is releasing the details of that bill today, and the bill says that it would require every primary and intermediate school to offer one or more second languages from a list of at least 10 national priority languages. So this is what it's all about. And I was just going to ask Chloe what your thoughts were on this bill.
Yep. So my thoughts on this bill, my understanding is that, so it's a members bill. Just to explain to the listeners how a members bill process works is basically, this is legislation which has been drafted by the Honourable Nikki Kaye and put into the members ballot, otherwise known as the biscuit tin colloquially. And basically there is no way that it's going to progress into a debate in the House unless it is pulled. So it's kind of a bit of a lottery for politicians who are in opposition to put legislation that they would like to see go through the House into that biscuit tin. So if it is pulled, then obviously it'll go to first reading where it will be debated. And there, you know, I'd like to have quite an in-depth discussion with the ex-minister for education about the purpose of her bill. I think that, yeah, it's great. It includes, insofar as it includes both New Zealand Sign Language and Te Reo Māori and the 10 languages. Yeah. But I also think that it's really critical that we do not lose Te Reo Māori in that conversation. Obviously, it is Green Party policy and now government policy to introduce compulsory and universal Te Reo Māori in schools. So again, we'd hope that that process, we'd hope that Nikki Kaye didn't want to kind of drown out New Zealand children learning Te Reo Māori in schools.
Yeah, because from what I've read, sign language and te reo are part of those 10
yep.
national priority languages, but obviously there would just be one of many, which means they
wouldn't
have the same.
Yeah, one of 10 from my understanding, so which would mean that they could potentially lose priority. And I would say that as those two languages are part of the three official languages of Aotearoa New Zealand, that they should absolutely be the top of the priority list.
Yeah, because they also, because they talked money, I guess, and $160 million for this policy over 4 years. And I think Chris Hipkins says that it was more going to be around $117 million per year. So obviously very conflicting numbers and
classic politics. Yeah. Hey,
and the well, we'll hear that just very soon. But basically, teachers' unions and principals' unions are saying that this money, they would like to see this money allocated to kind of more general education rather than just going towards languages, especially in the face of shortage of teachers.
Yeah, totally. And that's always going to be, at least in the current economic paradigm in which we all exist, that is always going to be one of the complications, right? We have to allocate resource somewhere unless we're going to raise some new form of revenue, which then means that that generation of resource goes into something else, and we've got more money in the pot to play with. So it is always a balance of priorities, and this again relates to what I was saying about how I would hope that we didn't see a deprioritization of those core languages, New Zealand's official languages, as a result of the likes of what Nikki Kaye is pushing. But again, we are all talking in hypotheticals, given that it's still a members' bill yet to be pulled from the ballot.
All right, well, that's me.
Sweet. Well, I think we're a bit over time, just a couple of minutes. But thank you so much, Chloe. Thanks, Lisa, for your input. It's been lovely talking to you.
Cheers, mate.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.